Now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations. from the drum High Noon off their Canyon Records CD entitled The Way It All Began. That particular song is known as a grass dance, and the time when tribal nations lived on the great prairies of what's now called North America, Indian scouts were sent out to prepare new village sites as a way of asking permission from the animals and plants of the grasslands to set up camp. The scouts would do an honor dance to Mother Earth. This grass dance also served to smooth down the tall grass for the teepees. The grass dance is often heard at powwows in remembrance of that cultural history. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's program is Program 4 in our special series, Fighting Nuclear Power, A Conversation with Mary Olson. Mary Olson is an anti-nuclear activist and staff member for many years with the fine organization Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Yad Kiddushi Native Center has networked with NIRS for a long time, especially fighting nuclear issues affecting tribal nations. Mary Olson, whom I am honored to call my friend, is director of NIRS's Southeast Office. Mary visited Yad Kiddushi Native Center, where we spoke together about many serious issues dealing with nuclear energy. Yad Kiddushi Native Center, as an Earth Justice organization, has from our very beginning been fighting against global nuclear energy policy, nuclear power, and all of the serious aspects of nuclear development, namely mining and milling of uranium, nuclear waste, weapons detonation tests, radioactive contamination of air, land, and water, poisoning ecosystems, human health impacts, and the international transport of nuclear fuel and/or nuclear waste by trucks, railroad, or ship. Nuclear power's long record of serious safety accidents, radiation release incidents, and violations of monitoring and operation procedures provide little assurance that a global nuclear industry can really be trusted to protect all life on the planet, now and into the future for many generations. What about nuclear accidents at power stations such as Diablo Canyon, Shoreham, Nine Mile Point, Midland, Marble Hill, Seabrook, Davis Bess, Comanche Peak, and many others I could mention? Remember Three Mile Island in 1979 and the efforts to cover up the truth of what happened by both government and industry officials? We now know that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission in 1979 greatly underestimated the seriousness and amounts of radiation released at TMI. We know now that there were great problems with air monitors not working at Three Mile Island. 1 week before the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania accident, an NRC inspector named Jim Cresswell met with two NRC commissioners, Peter Bradford and John Ahern, to express his concern that the Three Mile Island reactors were unsafe and should be shut down until the problems corrected. We know his warnings were dismissed. Some who are concerned about corporate control of nuclear power advocate governments operating nuclear power plants. Remember Chernobyl in Russia? Yucca Mountain and the Western Shoshone homeland, Nui Sogabia, now called the state of Nevada, the U.S. government's proposed storage site of America's nuclear waste has been publicly exposed to be unsuitable for radioactive waste storage. In testimony before the U.S. Senate, the chief U.S. Geological Survey scientist for Yucca Mountain admitted that as a result of political pressure, he lied under oath about the geological suitability of the planned nuclear waste repository. U.S. Department of Energy scientists have likewise admitted to not only falsifying scientific data, but also making up information about the long-term sustainability of Yucca Mountain as a result of political pressure
to present a favorable picture for Yucca Mountain. The economics of nuclear power generation, which disproportionately impacts the poor, is an entire topic little understood by the general public, who bears the outrageous per kilowatt costs of nuclear energy. Remember the industry's promise nuclear power would be, quote, too cheap to meter, unquote? While nuclear policy should be of concern to everyone, in many ways, nuclear issues most affects indigenous peoples throughout the world. The history of nuclear development, both for military weapons as well as for commercial nuclear power, is a history of abuse to native peoples and exploitation of our sacred territories of Mother Earth. Not only has tribal lands been raped and sacred sites desecrated for uranium mining, but many of those who worked as miners are tribal people who have had little economic choice but to labor in horrific health and safety conditions in order to support their families. Most native workers were never told of the grave health dangers from uranium mining, nor were they given any protective clothing or equipment. As a further insult, a number of American Indian homes and schools were knowingly built with radioactive adobe, which have caused many deaths and serious illness in Native communities. Carcinogenic, mutagenic, and teratogenic birth defects in American Indian families are now well-documented exposure effects. Precious aquifer water in very arid regions where uranium is mined have been greatly overdrawn and used up. Surface and underground water as well have been seriously contaminated with radioactivity. This, of course, has caused human health problems, as well as poisoning crops and livestock, which many native people depend upon for subsistence. As an ecologist, I've long spoken out about how radioactivity becomes part of the food web, poisoning all life. Radioactive isotopes, now in the atmosphere, are often transported by wind and or deposited from snow or rainfall, impacting many places on the Earth. The circumpolar Arctic, which in photographs look pristine, are now highly contaminated from nuclear fallout. A serious example is the case of the indigenous Arctic Sami reindeer people, who can no longer live the traditional herding life as a result of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant explosion, whose radiation poisoned their Arctic tundra, including their reindeer. In what is now called the U.S. Southwest, many tribal nations' homelands have been so wasted by the nuclear fuel cycle that sacred lands have been turned into highly toxic dead zones that are now termed national sacrifice areas. This is a situation I've seen in person and reported on for many years. An example, my work with the In Defense of Sacred Lands project. In the traditional homeland of the Oglala Tetuan, some call Sioux Indians, Lakota communities such as Red Shirt, who have fished the Cheyenne River and used river water for irrigating their gardens for many generations, now have radioactive warning signs posted along the river. Longtime listeners to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, have heard our 9-program interview series with Defenders of the Black Hills coordinator Charmaine Whiteface speak about many cultural and ecological issues affecting the Osete Sikawan, the Great Sioux Nation. One serious problem are the numerous abandoned uranium mines and radioactive waste in the sacred Black Hills, Paha Sapa. The Mediwakantan Dakota, who are more commonly known as the Prairie Island Indian community in Minnesota, have had to, since 1973, live next to Xcel Energy's 2 nuclear power 1,076 megawatt reactors called Prairie Island Nuclear Power Plant. In addition to the usual dangers of living adjacent to nuclear power plants, from routine releases of radiation venting into the air and toxic discharges into water, the Midiwakanton tribal community are also threatened by high-level radioactive spent fuel that are kept on-site in dry cask storage at Prairie Island Generating Station. Prairie Island is a floodplain of the Mississippi River. In the mid-1980s, my own Wabanaki Native Territory was threatened by a U.S. government proposed nuclear waste dump to be built on Penobscot land. This was after years of fighting against the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant that was built at a sacred coastal site we Indians call Winnemucca. The wonderful Quahog Clemshell Alliance that I and other Native and non-Native brothers and sisters were active in, although unable to stop Seabrook, at least till now, have prevented the planned nuclear waste dump being forced on to Wabanaki land. The spirit of the Quahog Clamshell Alliance, which brought people of different cultures and backgrounds together to protect Mother Earth and our own human family from the insanity of developing nuclear energy, is needed now more than ever. The resurgence of nuclear power throughout the world requires people to come together again to defend Mother Earth and all life from a greedy political, economic, insane nuclear industry. One of the greatest public relations deceptions is how nuclear power is now being promoted as an environmentally friendly energy source for the 21st century, as concern about global warming is now headline news. Yacht Kiddushi Native Center hopes this Wolf Mountain radio program encourages people to fight to defend Mother Earth from nuclear energy. It's better to be active today than radioactive tomorrow. It is now my great pleasure to welcome to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices my dear friend Mary Olson. Mary, Yacht Kiddushi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio tries not only to be a voice for justice and the well-being of all people in the world, but equally important, a voice for Mother Earth and all of our relations. In my Wabanaki language, we say, Kinon Wantakwasin, meaning all life on the planet, what in English is called the natural world. As you know, it is an indigenous principle to protect the environment. So when one talks about nuclear issues, it is essential that we speak out about the impacts nuclear radiation has to our biosphere's web of life. Nuclear pollution has greatly affected Earth's ecosystems. Animals, birds, plants, grasslands, forests, fish, and aquatic life throughout the world are also victims of the atomic age. One of the most outrageous examples is ocean dumping of radioactive equipment and nuclear waste. The IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, has reported that some 13 nations have dumped nuclear materials into the world's oceans in the 20th century. Despite important international treaties, such as the 1972 London Convention, which outlawed dumping of high-level nuclear waste at sea, the 1983 follow-up ban on low-level nuclear waste dumping, and the 1996 protocol that updated the 1972 London Convention, there is evidence that some countries still dispose nuclear materials into the oceans. Russia, for example, has poisoned the Arctic Sea's Barents, White, Kara regions, as well as the Sea of Japan. Russian nuclear waste includes the dumping of 21 nuclear reactors, effluent from nuclear weapons factories, and radioactivity from Russian Navy ports, surface and submarine ships. It is important to remember that when talking about nuclear waste, we're speaking about some of the most lethal and long-term poisonous toxins ever to impact Mother Earth. We don't really know how many curies of cesium-137, cobalt-60, iodine, and strontium in nuclear waste has dangerously contaminated the oceans. Certainly now in the 21st century, the world's fisheries and marine life are seriously threatened by nuclear pollution. This, of course, will affect human life as well. Mary, would you please share any comments you have on this grave concern?
Thank you, Ones, for bringing us into a focused way, because absolutely, it's all living beings, not only human beings, who are impacted by radiation. On the question of ocean dumping, yeah, there's been a lot of ocean dumping all off both the East Coast and the West Coast of the United States. You can Google an image called Radiation Hazards USA that was done by the Ray Panthers, two elders in the Washington, D.C. area about 10 years ago. So it's out of date, but on the other hand, the stuff that's happened doesn't change. And they actually show on this map of the lower 48 where the ocean dumping has happened off the United States. But the largest cases of ocean contamination are actually off the coast of France, in the southern area, not on the Mediterranean coast, but on the English Channel coast towards the southwest, I guess that would be. There's a place called La Hague, where they chop up high-level nuclear waste, dissolve it in acid, pull the plutonium out for supposed reuse as fuel, but I actually think that they're also making nuclear weapons out of that plutonium. And once they've taken the plutonium out and the uranium out, they do this through chemical separations, with that acid being key to the whole story, they now have liquid, highly radioactive waste with all that fission products in it. Now, they do try and concentrate the most deadly portion, and they take that aside, and the least contaminated stuff they call so-called low-level waste, and they bury that. But the intermediate stuff, they actually dilute down with water, and then they, I live in the mountains of North Carolina, and it's called straight piping. When you don't have a septic system, you just send your toilet straight in the stream. Well, that's what France is doing with their intermediate level, high-level nuclear waste, straight off the coast. About Greenpeace actually busted them, showing that the levels of radioactivity were hundreds of thousands of times higher than permitted. And there have been studies done, again, looking at human beings, but nonetheless, children, if they play for as little as 1 hour a month on those beaches, they have a 400% increased chance of leukemia. So this is not without consequence. The other place that it's happening is the Irish Sea. In Scotland, there's a place called Sellafield. And Sellafield does a similar type process of chopping up the nuclear waste, dissolving it in acid, handling the waste in various ways, but the portion that goes out into the Irish Sea has contaminated all the way up into the waters of Scandinavia. And there's been a lot of ruckus about it. Ireland has been very unhappy about it. The sea life is definitely contaminated to the level that there's been some concerns about the lobsters and where they were going. Anyway, there's big impacts. The other little piece I want to put on here while we're talking about impacts beyond our own species, beyond two-leggeds, the largest industrial accident in the modern era was the explosion of a nuclear power plant in the Soviet Union called Chernobyl. It is now the Ukraine, since the Soviet Union broke up a couple of years after that. Gorbachev has acknowledged that externalizing the cost of Chernobyl outside of Russia was part of the decision to break up at that time. It wasn't the only thing. But in 10 years, they spent $350 billion. So enormous impacts, 30,000 people dead in 10 years. A lot of people in the nuclear industry say, oh, but there's so much wildlife around Chernobyl now, because they had to evacuate people from living in hundreds of square miles. So there is now a reserve where there are few people. Yes, there is quite a bit of wildlife. But what most people don't know or understand is that mutations are, for the most part, lethal. That's one of the biggest impacts of too much radiation, is the inability to reproduce, inability to have a baby. Either the baby miscarries and isn't fully formed, or it's formed but can't function in some fundamental way, can't breathe, can't eat, can't walk. And there's nobody going out and finding out what the four-leggeds are doing and what kind of impact there is. But I have a very strong hunch that the amphibians, the frogs that are disappearing, is probably multiple causes, but the mud that they live in all winter, they don't move around. So whatever's in that mud affects them directly. And the fallout from Chernobyl went 6 times around the northern hemisphere. That reactor burned for 14 days, and the reactor core itself, the particles of this highly radioactive stuff that become, you know, we call it waste when it comes out of the reactor, but that's what was in there when it exploded and burned. So it was particles of this highly radioactive waste that went around Northern Hemisphere 6 times. So there was a lot of fallout, a lot of impact on four-leggeds. And the last little piece I'll add is that I had a professor when I was in college who was an ornithologist, somebody who studies birds. And he was at Point Reyes Research Station in California the summer of 1986, which was the year that the reactor exploded in April. And there were no songbird babies that year. They studied songbirds. They tracked them. They didn't hurt them. They just were counting them. There weren't any babies that year. And they couldn't come up with any explanation. And then finally someone said, well, maybe it was Chernobyl.
Mountain Radio's audio library. The name of that song was Shut 'Em Down, referring to the need to not only prevent any more nuclear power plants to be built, but equally important, to shut down all of the nuclear reactors in current operation, many of which are now old and therefore more threatening, since with age comes greater risk of a nuclear accident. My guest today on Wolf Mountain Radio is Mary Olson, a 17-year staff member of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Their excellent website, www.nirs.org. In today's program introduction, I briefly mentioned the 1979 Three Mile Island nuclear plant accident. Mary, I am interested to hear your thoughts about TMI. To me, it is very important to remember how the U.S. government, the state of Pennsylvania, and the utility operator, Metropolitan Edison, not only downplayed the seriousness of what happened to TMI Unit 2, but also what many consider deliberate deception, lies, and cover-up of information concerning Three Mile Island. Several brief examples. The public was first told that there was no radiation releases. That was quickly shown to be a lie. The public was then told radiation releases were, quote, controlled and done to prevent pressure on the reactor core, unquote. That statement contradicted the first assurance of no radioactive releases from the plant. The government, in referring to radiation releases, used the term insignificant. It is public knowledge that there was no accurate way of knowing the amount of radiation released, since environmental monitors were not for quite some time working. The NRC later testified before Congress that they did not know and still could not determine how much radiation was actually released. The public was misled about how critical was the loss of coolant damage to TMI-2 reactor. Press releases stated that there was no melting of fuel inside the core. We know that wasn't true, since robotic cameras later showed that a substantial portion of the fuel did melt. The accident was therefore a partial core meltdown, a very, very serious in dangerous situation. Lastly, there still remains a lot of concern about human health impacts from TMI. There are allegations that the state of Pennsylvania did its best to hide epidemiological records. Independent investigations by highly respected medical doctors showed alarming cases of cancer, leukemia, respiratory problems, birth defects, and other serious illnesses in disproportion to the population prior to the radiation exposure. This seriously questions the U.S. government's view that there was minimal health impacts from Three Mile Island. Mary, would you please share your thoughts about Three Mile Island?
Yes, there was absolutely a cover-up of the Three Mile Island accident, which has continued to the very recent time. There absolutely was massive releases of radioactivity from the site those days. It was a number of days. We were very lucky that there was no massive explosion at that site the way there was at Chernobyl. So we were spared the level of impact that Chernobyl has had. However, thousands and hundreds of thousands of people were exposed to radiation from the Three Mile Island accident, which people probably know this, but it's on an island in the Susquehanna River near Harrisburg. have no doubt Harrisburg is still a ghost town compared to the thriving city that it once was. Have no doubt there is mutations of plants and animals throughout that whole area. Have no doubt that Dr. Stephen Wing, who is at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, got access to this data that was collected 5 years after the Three Mile Island accident. And originally, the authors of the first paper said that there was no correlation between the radiation released and any cancer or other health effects. Dr. Wing took their data and used good scientific methodology on it and showed there absolutely was an increase in all cancers, particularly lung cancer and prostate cancer, probably forgetting a couple of others, but there were several very key findings in that data that had been covered up because the court had told the original researchers that they could only assume that people had received a dose of radiation that is equivalent to about twice what they would have gotten from a natural background situation. So the government told the researchers what dose to assume. Dr. Wing did not have to be so constrained, and he looked at the actual results and compared it to control groups in the same area and found 400% increases, which is not trivial at all. And one of the most interesting things, though, was that this data was collected at only 5 years after the accident. So it's a lot of question marks in that story. But then we come down to the fact that the victims, the people who were affected, have been trying to get redress, trying to get settlement. They went to court. And down to the end, unfortunately, the trickster had its day because for whatever reason, they agreed that they would, I don't know how to put the legal thing together, but basically the judge got them to agree that they would only get benefits if they could prove that they had a dose above 10 millirems. And they didn't get it. You can't prove any millirems. Millirems is not something you can measure. Millirems is something that's calculated from a mathematical model. And there is no proof. There was no proof at the time. There is no proof today. There is no proof 300 years from now. There is no proof. So in a sane society, there would have been a large set of embracing arms put around all the people who suffered that terrible, terrifying experience and all the consequences, whether it be short-term radiation symptoms or the people who've had miscarriages or the people who've had cancers. We would have embraced them and we would have said, how can we help you? And instead we live in a society where they were tricked and not a single penny has flowed from either the government or the nuclear utility that, you know, owned and operated that facility.
Thank you.
You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you heard prior to our program station identification was from flutist Coyote Old Man off his BMI CD, Floating on Evening. The name of that song was The Way Otters Swim. I featured that song because recently I was talking with some elders about how there are fewer and fewer otters these days compared to in my youth when they were seen everywhere. Sadly, otters are another biological indicator of how Mother Earth has suffered and is losing many animal, plant, bird, fish, and aquatic life relatives as a direct result of human anthropogenic impact on the planet. Nuclear development is certainly a major cause, considering radiation's effects on all nature's genetic makeup. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yatkidishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. In the studio today is anti-nuclear activist Mary Olson, staff member of NIRS, the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Their excellent website is www.nirs.org. Mary, my last question to you, as I thank you for sharing your knowledge and concerns about nuclear issues with Wolf Mountain Radio's worldwide listeners, is simply this. How do you keep your dedication to fighting nuclear issues for so many years, considering how powerful governments and the nuclear industry are in their insane promotion of nuclear energy and even nuclear weapons? For me, my spirit to defend Mother Earth remains strong, largely due to my indigenous teachings that all life, all of our relations, Kinawantakwisin, are considered sacred. Native people are raised on Earth ethics, such as the principle of seven generations, caring about the well-being of seven generations into the future. My cultural spiritual connection to Mother Earth is why I have been an activist most of my life and will always be an Earth justice warrior. The question as to how you and others who were raised in predominantly Western Eurocentric society have come to care for Mother Earth and be willing to fight the many insane ways of damaging our biosphere, such as nuclear power, is a very important question. Mary, would you please share your thoughts on how or why you have worked so long for what I term Earth justice?
These times do tend to be overwhelming, and we do need to reach out to those near and dear to us and support each other and encourage each other to not give up. At the same time, I guess I'm a believer in the very long plane, the very long view. Maybe studying evolutionary biology gave me that. And I hope and I pray and I guess I fervently try to believe, anyway, that what we're seeing are the last gasps, the really overblown, almost caricature last gasps of a system that is not sustainable. And since it is not sustainable, it will not be sustained, right? I mean, sustainable means it can be sustained, and it's not. So we can rise up in the morning with hope in our hearts. I'll tell you what I carry to bed every night and get up in the morning is that I know where the high-level nuclear waste is right now. Now, I understand that some people who live near it may not be happy that that's where it is, But we start moving that stuff around, it's going to be on trucks and trains, on regular interstate highways, on rail yards in the urban centers of this land, and I won't know where it is anymore. And it is the responsibility of this generation at a level that's unparalleled, but unfortunately it's going to be the responsibility of every generation to come after. So for me, the top priority is to take the perspective that we have to know where this waste is. We have to keep it where it is until and unless moving it is going to make it safer and better. And we have to stop making any more. So Nuclear Information and Resource Service's approach to stopping making any more is to tell folks, hey, get involved. Get your local group involved. Any group. It doesn't have to be an environmental organization. We need the professional associations. We need the local governments. We need resolutions passed at every level. We need people to make it clear that the process of leadership is one in which people will be held accountable. So we need to be putting the heat on and saying, no way, no how, no nukes, no coal, no kidding. We can't at this juncture afford, is that the right word I want to use? I don't know, that sounds like money. We can't allow ourselves to ignore the crises that are real. Nor can we allow ourselves to adopt a false solution that will suck so much resource. Nuclear power sucks, and the main thing it sucks is money. And that's really the bottom line, as we say, is the money. And where are we going to allow our government, where are we going to allow our local communities, where are we going to allow the corporations to put it? And where it has to go is towards sustainability. So that's the hope, and that's the task, and everybody's got to get involved.
We are standing here together with a bunch of our friends, helping nuclear power come to an end. This movement is growing and it's getting mighty strong, 'cause we know we are right and this is our song. We've seen many a struggle in our so many years. Some ended in triumph, the others in tears. But we're the type of folks that are gonna join in a fight when we know that the struggle is proper and right. We are standing here together with a bunch of our friends, helping nuclear power come to an end. This movement is growing and it's getting mighty strong, 'cause we know we are right and this is our song. We look towards the sun and we look towards the wind. There are many alternatives to make the turbine spin. Hydro and coal, why just to name a few. If you want to join the struggle, the clans will stand with you. We are standing here together with a bunch of our friends, helping nuclear power come to an end. This movement is growing and it's getting mighty strong, 'cause we know we are right and this is our song. We know that it's not safe, we know that it's not clean. Don't want their plutonium nor the radioactive steam. This is our world, we want it safe, my friends. We'll fight this nuclear madness right till the bitter end. We are standing here together with a bunch of our friends, helping nuclear power come to an end. This movement is growing and it's getting mighty strong, 'cause we know we are right and this is our song. If you're against nuclear power, stand up and clap your hands. Let's send this no-nuke message throughout this beautiful land. A new day is dawning, the sun is shining bright. If we all stand together, it's bound to come out right. We are standing here together with a bunch of our friends, helping nuclear power come to an end. This movement is growing and it's getting mighty strong, 'cause we know we are right and this is our song. The time it is coming, they'll have to hear our song. We're hand in hand together in strength and march along. There are other ways to light up our cities and our towns. From Diablo to Seabrook, we're gonna shut them down. We are standing here together with a bunch of our friends, helping nuclear power come to an end. This movement is growing and it's getting mighty strong, 'cause we
Wolf Mountain Radio's audio library. That song, sung by the band Atomic Cafe, was entitled We're Standing Here Together to Put an End to Nuclear Power. For more information and ways to join the movement to fight against nuclear energy and work for a safe, clean, sustainable energy future, please visit the Nuclear Information Resource Services Center's website, www.nirs.org. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We shall conclude today's program with a song by Hopi singer Clark Tanahongva off his Kenyan record CD, Haute Villa. The name of this song is Mystical Clouds. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kanan Wan Takwasin to all of our relations.
Yo, I'm a kid.